Chapter 7. Harmful and Beneficial Feelings. Once there was a Brahmin named Akosana, a person of high rank and authority. He had a habit of getting angry with everyone, even for no reason. When Akosana heard that the Buddha never got angry, he went to see the Buddha and abused him with insults. The Buddha listened patiently and compassionately. Then he asked Akosana, "Do you have friends or relatives?"
"Yes, I have many relatives and friends," Akosana replied.
"Do you visit them periodically?" the Buddha asked.
"Of course, I visit them often," said Akosana.
"Do you bring gifts for them when you visit?" the Buddha continued.
"Surely, I never go to see them without a gift."
Then the Buddha asked, "When you give them gifts, suppose they do not accept, what should you do with the gifts?"
"I would take them home and enjoy them with my family."
Then the Buddha said, "Similarly, friend, you gave me a gift of your insults and abuse. I do not accept it. It is all yours. Take it home and enjoy it with your family." Akosana was deeply embarrassed. He understood and admired the Buddha's advice. As we have discussed, we experience 108 different kinds of feelings. Both sensory contact with external objects through the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body, and non-sensory contact with internal objects within the mind give rise to sensations and emotions. These feelings can be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Some depend on past contact, others on present contact, still others on imagination of future contact. Feelings can be intense and clear, or weak and subtle. As we improve our ability to recognize the variety of sensations and emotions within the aggregate of feelings, we can also become mindful of the habits or tendencies that are their underlying causes. Three are essential. Some pleasant feelings have greed, desire, or craving as their underlying tendency. Some unpleasant feelings have anger or hatred as their underlying tendency. And some neutral feelings are rooted in ignorance or confusion. Feelings that are activated by any of these negative tendencies are called worldly. Worldly feelings arise most often when we are engaged in everyday pursuits, such as seeking wealth, companionship, a better job, or more power and recognition. Becoming aware of our tendencies toward anger and attachment, and using mindfulness to subdue these habits, gives us the opportunity to experience spiritual feelings, such as letting go, spiritual urgency, and the special joy we experience when we meditate. As our mindfulness deepens, we enjoy spiritual, pleasant feelings more frequently. Overcoming our negative tendencies takes hard work. Like Akosana, we may have the habit of getting angry even when there is no reason. Akosana's habit was so strong that if a man who had been wronged did not get angry, Akosana would get angry because the man did not. However, like Akosana, when we become aware that anger has become a habit, we are often embarrassed. Anger is an unpleasant emotion that feels awful. Though it may take effort to become mindful of our anger and learn to control it, it's relatively easy for us to see that anger is harmful. Desire and craving are much more difficult to recognize and eliminate. Pleasure generally feels good and makes us feel happy. It's easy to wish to hold on to our good feelings. Our habit is to cling to the pleasure we have, to want more, and to want to experience the pleasure again in the future. However, as we all know very well, whenever we try to hold on to a pleasurable feeling, we end up disappointed. Though it's less easy to remember that desire is harmful, when we think carefully, we see that to end our suffering, we must end our craving. The third tendency is delusion. Ordinarily, we experience this feeling as confusion with regard to ourself and how we exist. Sometimes, when we experience a feeling that is neither painful nor pleasurable, we grab onto it with the thought, "Aha, this is real. Let me hold on to it." We believe that there must be something real and permanent called I or me that is experiencing this feeling. When we look for this eternal self, it seems to be identical with the five aggregates, or within the five aggregates.
Only wise and diligent mindfulness could root out this harmful misconception. In regard to these three, the Buddha's instructions are clear. Bhikkhus, the underlying tendency to lust should be abandoned in regard to pleasant feeling. The underlying tendency to aversion should be abandoned in regard to painful feeling. The underlying tendency to ignorance, delusion, should be abandoned in regard to neither painful nor pleasant feeling. When a bhikkhu has abandoned these underlying tendencies, then he is one who sees rightly. He has made an end to suffering. Translator, Bhikkhu Bodhi. Let's look more closely at these three harmful feelings so that we can recognize them when they arise. We also consider beneficial feelings, such as loving friendliness, joy, and equanimity, that can help us to overcome them. Our aim is to strengthen our mindfulness of feelings so that we too can see rightly and end our suffering. Anger and hatred. Anger often starts with a feeling of annoyance or irritation. The trigger can be anything. A work colleague gets a promotion we feel we deserve. A friend makes an unkind remark. A neighbor forgets again to put out the trash. If we ignore these feelings, they can grow into resentment, contempt, even hatred. The underlying tendency of these feelings is aversion, the feeling of disliking something and wanting to be separated from it. When we pay attention, we see how miserable anger makes us feel. Our mind is cloudy and our thoughts are tangled. We feel restless and agitated. We lose our appetite and cannot appreciate anything pleasurable. When we burn with what the Buddha calls the fire of hatred, we are like a pot of boiling water, all hot and confused. Even meditation makes us irritated. To control anger, the first step is becoming aware of it. With practice, we can learn to recognize the signs and take action before our feelings escalate. As soon as we notice that we are getting angry, we pay total attention to the feeling without trying to justify it. Anger grows when we remember past events, dwell on present situations, and imagine what might happen in the future. Instead, we use what we have learned about mindfulness to put out the fire. We think, anger is an unpleasant feeling. It has arisen in dependence on causes and conditions. Everything is impermanent. When these factors disappear, this unpleasant feeling will also disappear. Here are some other ways to use mindfulness to overcome anger. Key points for dealing with anger. Practice mindfulness of breathing. Take a few deep breaths. Inhale, exhale, and count one. Repeat up to 10. Then do the same, counting down from 10 to 1. Continue until you feel calm. Practice restraint. If a conversation seems likely to become an argument, simply stop talking. During the pause, use mindfulness to investigate whether jealousy, stinginess, vengefulness, or some other unwholesome feeling is hiding behind your words. Practice patience to buy time, so that you can say the right thing at the right time. Avoid blaming. When you say, "It's not my fault. He always does something to make me angry," you sound just like a child saying, "He started it." Don't blame yourself either. It takes two to have an argument. Talk to a warm-hearted friend. Your friend might remind you, "You cannot know what is going on in someone else's mind. There may be reasons for this behavior that you can't see." Cultivate gratitude. When you are angry, it is easy to forget the good things someone has done for you. Being grateful softens your heart. Practice generosity. Change the atmosphere between you and a person with whom you are angry by offering a gift or other favor. Doing so may give both of you a chance to apologize. Listen to the Dharma. Find the Dharma talk on the web or read the Dharma article or book. Even if the subject does not pertain to anger, when you hear the Dharma, your anger fades. Avoid angry people. Spending time with people prone to anger can make you tense and anxious. Eventually, you may become angry as well. make a commitment. In the morning, when your mind is fresh, say words such as, "Something might happen today to make me angry. A conversation, a person, or a situation I cannot anticipate may irritate me. Whatever comes up, today I'm going to do my best to be mindful and not get angry." Remember that you do not want to die with anger. If your mind is confused at the time of death, you may be reborn in a painful state. Life is short. Live yours in peace and harmony without anger. Using mindfulness in this way is a type of skillful effort. First, we try to prevent anger from arising. If it does arise, we take steps to overcome it. These two activities work together to make us calm. One day we will say, "Ah, it is wonderful. I'm a different person now. I can handle my anger. This has become possible because of my mindfulness." When the mind is calm, it is easy to cultivate loving friendliness, metta in Pali and maitri in Sanskrit. This beneficial feeling is a natural sense of interconnectedness with all beings. Because we want peace, happiness, and joy, we know that all others, including anyone with whom we have had difficulties, must also wish for these qualities. The daily mindfulness practice I suggest in the section titled "The Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutta" is a good way to begin. Loving friendliness heals the wounds of anger. We feel comfortable, secure, and so relaxed that we can talk with anybody without getting angry. Even if someone insults us, we respond with patience and compassion, as the Buddha did to Akusana. Desire and craving. Desire is everywhere. Every living thing has the desire to stay alive. Even plants strive to propagate themselves. Craving is our creator. Our parents' craving for each other and our craving for rebirth combined to create us. Even painful feelings give rise to craving. When a painful feeling arises, we do not like it. We wish to get rid of the pain, and we wish to enjoy some pleasure. Both wishes are craving. Surely, we think, desire is necessary. Without it, there would be no birth. Life as we know it would end. In a way, we are right. Desire is the underlying motivation for the continuation of life in samsara, the cycle of uncontrolled death and rebirth. As the sutta tells us, all dharmas converge in feeling. Of course, there are moments of pleasure or enjoyment in our life. We are not suffering all the time. 60 such moments are mentioned in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutta. Enjoyment is the reward we get for all this suffering. That is why we live. But we must work very hard to get this pleasure because pain comes along with it. As our growing understanding of mindfulness teaches us, whenever we experience a pleasant feeling, we wish to hold on to it. If someone suggests that clinging is a problem, we get upset and try to justify it. How can I live without clinging to my family, my house, my country? The truth is, we don't really want to be free from desire or to admit that clinging to the pleasures of the senses, the taste of delicious food, the sound of music, gossip or a joke, the touch of a sexual embrace, ends unavoidably in disappointment and suffering. We don't have to deny that pleasant feelings are pleasurable, but we must remember that like every other feeling, pleasure is impermanent. Wishing to keep any person, place, possession or experience with us forever is hopeless. Moreover, the wish for sensory pleasure distracts us from our mindfulness. When we are sitting on the cushion, the desire might arise in us to eat a piece of chocolate or to feel the touch of our partner. If we allow this feeling to grow, our mindfulness vanishes. Desire takes over and we reflect, "This is a beautiful feeling. It gives me pleasure. This taste, smell, touch or sound gives me pleasure. This is all I need in my life. It makes me happy, comfortable. It makes me healthy and strong. It gives me full satisfaction." But then perhaps we recognize, "I have this desire in me." We remember that sensory pleasure binds us to this life and future lives. It disrupts our mindfulness and blocks our ability to attain higher states of concentration. What we really want is to enjoy the profound pleasure of deep meditation that leads to liberation from the cycle of suffering. When we are bound to sensory pleasure, liberation is impossible. So we use mindfulness to penetrate the superficiality of our desire and reflect, if I cling to this object, I will end up in pain. I can't hold on to it forever. I have no way of controlling it. If I get involved in it, I'll lose my mindfulness. I have enjoyed many things in life. Where are they now? Why should I sacrifice this precious moment for the sake of superficial satisfaction? Let me not think of it. Because of mindfulness, our desire fades away, at least for the moment. When it disappears, we notice that it is gone. We reflect, that desire is no longer in my mind. We remain mindful to make sure that it does not come back. Pleasure without pain is possible only as we progress toward higher states of mindfulness. Unlike sensory pleasure that leads only to an instant of temporary happiness, the joy we feel when we achieve deep concentration brings peace and tranquility. This beneficial feeling is accompanied by energy and focus, along with the wholesome desire to experience the wonderful feeling of joy again and again. I explore this topic in much more detail in my book, Beyond Mindfulness in Plain English. Delusion. Delusion is the confused way we regard all objects, including me, as permanent and as possessing a self or soul. Because of this confusion, we believe that objects and our feelings about them, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, can bring us permanent happiness or cause us permanent misery. We often notice this confusion when we experience a neutral feeling. Even though we are healthy and have done our meditation as well as we can, we have some kind of nagging feeling in our mind. This feeling is neutral, neither pleasant nor unpleasant, but its underlying tendency is confusion. We think, I exist. This is how my self works. This feeling and all other feelings are part of me. What causes this confusion? For one thing, when we remember our childhood, we believe the same I existed then as now, ignoring the many ways our body, feelings, and other aggregates have changed since I was a child. We also believe that this same I will live into our old age, and even into the next life, ignoring all of the changes that will happen between now and then. The information we get from our senses seems to support this mistaken view. When we see our current body, hear our current voice, smell our current smell, taste food and drink, and touch physical objects, we think, these are the senses that I had yesterday, last week, last month, 80 years ago. I still remember the conversation I had with him or with her. This same I existed then and will continue to exist through time. But even a basic understanding of impermanence reveals that this belief is mistaken. All forms, feelings, perceptions, thoughts, and even consciousness itself are impermanent, arising, existing for a time, and then passing away. Happily, all of our confused habits of mind are also impermanent, even delusion itself. Like anger and craving, delusion arises dependent on causes and conditions. When these causes and conditions change, as they can as a result of our practice of mindfulness, delusion itself vanishes. Equanimity. The beneficial feeling we hope to cultivate through our mindfulness practice is equanimity. When we rest in equanimity, our feelings are in perfect balance. We neither push away unpleasant feelings nor grasp at pleasant ones. We are not confused by ignorance and see everything very clearly. Since we don't identify ourselves with our feelings, they pass quietly away, leaving us at peace. As a feeling, equanimity is both neutral and spiritual. It is neither pleasant nor unpleasant, but it is not indifferent. We are awake and alert, and can continue our observation of our body, feelings, thoughts, and other experiences without being pushed and pulled by desire or aversion. As the Sutta tells us, when we are in a state of equanimity and see a pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral sight, we recognize that it is conditioned, gross, and dependently arisen. Then we return to equanimity as quickly as we might open or shut our eyes. The same is true for each of the other senses. When meditators hear a pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral sound, they understand that it is conditioned, gross, and dependently arisen. Then they turn their minds to equanimity just as quickly as a man snaps his fingers. When they smell a pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral smell, they understand that it is conditioned, gross, and dependently arisen. Then they turn their minds to equanimity just as quickly as drops of water roll off a sloping lotus leaf. Similarly, when they experience an idea with their minds and a pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral sensation arises, they understand that it is conditioned, gross, and dependently arisen. Then, just as when two or three drops of water fall onto an iron plate that has been heated for a whole day, the falling of the drops might be slow, but they quickly evaporate and disappear. In the same way, sensations arisen due to ideas are replaced quickly and easily with equanimity. With equanimity, we are no longer troubled by the ups and downs of pleasure and pain. Mind and body are in balance. We are free of restlessness, agitation, and worry. Confusion has ended, and we rest in harmony with reality. Even the subtle desire for a beautiful experience to continue has disappeared. Instead, we feel immeasurable loving friendliness and boundless compassion. Having completely let go of what the Buddha calls low-quality pleasant feelings, the pleasures of family, friends, good health, prosperity, we experience high-quality pleasant feelings, the profound joys of higher states of meditative concentration. With each higher state, our enjoyment increases until we attain what the Buddha calls the cessation of feeling and perception. From there, we can move to the highest quality pleasure of all, Nibbana, total liberation from suffering.